Support for this show comes from Art Beats and Lyrics, a new documentary from Vox Creative along with Jack Daniel's Tennessee Honey and Cope Creative. Directed by Bill Horace, Art Beats and Lyrics showcases how a humble art show has grown into a cultural phenomenon. The film unveils the origin stories of the event's founder, Jabari Graham, and its curator, Dwayne W. Wright, exploring how Atlanta has shaped their individual paths while also revealing their distinct roles within Art Beats and Lyrics. The documentary follows Jabari W. and several of this year's feature artists as they gear up for ABNL's 20th anniversary tour, captivating thousands of fans at each and every show. Stream Art, Beats, and Lyrics now on Hulu. Please drink responsibly. Whiskey Specialty, 35% alcohol by volume, Jack Daniel's Distillery, Lynchburg, Tennessee. Jack Daniel's and Tennessee Honey are registered trademarks. 2024 Jack Daniel's, all rights reserved.
Welcome to Intercepted, presented by Acme Packing Company. I'm Justice Mosqueda. I'm joined here by Seth Galina. Save the people, Seth.
What's up? I'm Seth Galina. I work for PFF.
He does work for PFF. And we're joined by another guest, Derek Clausen. Say what's up to the people, Derek.
What's up to the people? I do not work for PFF.
You don't.
You turned down. Don't look. I don't like this. You could have been my co-host on a podcast. You turned me down. So let's not get into
it. I never heard any official, you know.
So. All right, enough of this. We're going to be talking about Aaron Rodgers. Okay, for the first half of this podcast. And then we're going to break down Bills Packers the second half. First thing, though, Seth, I need a plea with you. I had PFF Ultimate for 2.5 years because I worked for the XFL. It ran out like a couple weeks ago. It's killing me already. What do I need to do to get PFF Ultimate?
Man, there's just like you. Okay, but again, you also had your chance to work for PFF during certain times.
The XFL gave me more money. Okay? I don't complain. That if we haven't had PFF Mike on here. PFF Mike trained me to work for PFF during his run for The Bachelorette when I didn't even know he was training me. Like right after being sent home. I didn't know this. He trained me. I went through all the training. And then, like, right as I was going to work for PFF, the XFL bag came in. And I don't regret it.
Did you have Zombie Ultimate for, like, 2 years, then?
I had Zombie Ultimate for, yeah, since the XFL folded. And what would that have been? March of 2020.
I mean, it was COVID, yeah.
They paid for it. Vince McMahon's money paid for it. So I'm just mad. I was hoping. PFF just kind of forgot about it and I would just have it eternally, which is not how that ended up working. Enough of this. Aaron Rodgers. Seth, I want to start this conversation with you. The internal talk at PFF. What is the internal monologue you guys are having about Aaron Rodgers? I know you guys aren't a monolith. You're laughing at me right now, but like, what are the conversations that you guys are having about Rodgers right now?
Well, I'm not having any conversations about Rodgers other than like with you guys. So we're all probably going to be on the same page here. I think when I watch it, there's, you know, you hate to like speculate and kind of say these words, but like there's a poutiness to his game right now, which, you know, given how he's talked to the media recently, it kind of makes sense trying to put 101 together where it's like, hey, if it's not perfect, then I don't want it. You know, in terms of the play design, in terms of, you know, post snap, whether he's going to throw the football or not. So that's kind of what I'm seeing. I do see a little bit of accuracy issues over the last few weeks. And it's funny because you watch Rodgers and he obviously has such a unique way of getting rid of the football. The release is lightning quick, the way he kind of like hops as he's throwing it. And then it's like, okay, well, he's normally accurate, but now you watch it and I should know better, but now I watch it. And I see him do that little hop thing and the ball hits the dirt and you're like, oh, well, maybe Aaron, you should be doing that, even though I know better than to question him on mechanics. But that's kind of the stuff I'm seeing. And again, you don't want to use the word like pouty, but it's kind of like that.
You can use the word pouty. We saw
the Jets game. The Jets game was like, at least in terms of like that, him kind of getting into fits and stuff. I feel like it was like the first or second drive of the Jets game, dude. He got a pressure. I don't even think it was a sack. I think he just got hit getting the ball out. And you could just see he was not having it for the rest of the day. And it was like, all right, I think the Jets are going to win the football game.
That's one of the more frustrating things, I think, about the LaFleur era Packers. And it's not always just Rodgers, but when this team gets punched in the mouth, it's just over for them. And I know that their defenses look good at times. I know if you look at just like the raw passing stats, like they haven't even allowed that many yards this year. A lot of that came off of crossers. They've nailed that down the last 2 weeks. They're playing a whole lot more fronts the last 2 weeks than they have in the past, where they were just running, you know, match quarters and stuff like that. But it's been consistent for like 3 years. It's like they get punched in the mouth either on offense or defense, and they can't make it out of that hole. And it's what ends up killing them in the playoffs eventually. The Rodgers thing is funny because, I mean, I've talked to dudes who've actually like worked with Rodgers, like trained with Rodgers, right? And they talk about like all the weird footwork stuff, like to your guys' point. I guess the way he talks about it is like cutting the split is kind of how he explains it. And it's just shortening the distance between the throw, right? Like when he's doing those, like, it's almost like old run and shoot stuff. Like if you look at like the old June Jones things where it's like, you're just cutting the distance for some of these outside throws. The problem is all these shots are hidden on the outside. It's like you're getting single high. You know, they're going to try to run like a slot fade or something like that. If you're playing too high, they're just going to try to hit the flats over and over and over again. Keegan, who we had on the podcast before the London game, which is when Rodgers banged up his thumb on that Hail Mary attempt to end the game. Keegan sent me the Next Gen Stats, what do you call it, book? I don't know what it is. It's like the game preview thing that they have. Like Seth probably knows. He's in Chris Collinsworth's ear on Sunday Night Football. So, but he sent it to me, and it's like the EPA, one, Rodgers already last year was throwing the flats more than anyone else in the league. That has increased. The difference is, they were first in efficiency in terms of like EPA, right? Like they're getting the most out of those flat routes, right? And now they're like one of the lowest in the league. And you watch some of these plays, like the fourth down play last week. I don't know if you guys saw it. Was the one that kind of everyone points to, right? The Packers are running a variation of snag. They're in a bunch set. Moose Johnston actually thinks that it's a screen play. It's not a screen.
Well, I mean, you look at it and you're like, I think for all of us, when we watched it either live or
on live, the, on yes,
22, you're like, oh, it's a screen. Like clearly it's a screen. And then it's like,
cause it hits so not fast. Yeah.
Yeah.
Cause it hits so fast, but it's a snag. I mean, Amari, who, you know, he didn't even single him out. He's just like, Watkins should have blocked that. Amari's not running or is not blocking either. He's running a route. He's running a snag route. And it looks like a lot of just like predetermined stuff thrown into the flats. And sometimes he's not even like reading stuff right off of RPOs, where like the flat's not open on the RPO. You know, Nate Tice, our buddy, works for The Athletic, had a couple clips that he was sending me throughout the week and was like, if Rodgers hands this off, like Aaron Jones is untouched for like 8 yards, right? And some of that, I guess, has to do with motion, because some of those plays do have motion, but you're not changing the key, the guy that you're supposed to be reading when there is the motion. So like that shouldn't be impacting it that much.
He's 37 years old. He's played in the league for 15 years. He can see and count. Like this shouldn't be that hard for him.
It's tough. Go ahead. The motion stuff is like, especially on a play like an RPO. I mean, especially on the play that I know, that one of the plays I know you're talking about, it's like you're literally reading the guy who's running with the guy in motion.
Yeah, he's, you know, sprinting, what I mean?
It's like, it's
the
not
field.
Like you're reading safety rotation or anything. You're literally just reading a guy coming across the field.
Yeah. So this is all to say, because there is, if it's not a damn civil war, I don't know what it is in Packers Twitter right now. Packers fans are freaking out. We can't deal with three straight losses, and we're staring down a fourth because the Buffalo Bills are on Sunday Night Football. People are freaking out. There's like debate between if it's the things around Rodgers or if it's Rodgers. And I think fundamentally it's a both. It's both. It really is. When you're watching the film, Rodgers is also making mistakes. And I don't care that he's on the McAfee show saying, you know, Pancha Karma Football Focus is giving him the highest grade of his whole season against Washington. Like he still is making mistakes out there.
Yeah. The boring answer is that it is both, right? Because I think on the one hand, it's very clear how bad the receiver talent is hurting them. Cause last year, like the way they generated explosives, they like kind of sometimes LaFleur would do something interesting, but it wasn't like McVay where they were getting you in this perfect personnel package. You know, they're running this insane route combination, blah, blah, blah. It was just Davante Adams is the best back shoulder guy in the league. And sometimes Marquez Valdes-Scantling was faster than everybody. That was really the entire way.
You forgot about Lazard over the middle. Lazard over the middle.
That one they still have, kind of.
And those plays to MVS or Lazard or literally whoever else that wasn't Davante Adams, I mean, so much of that was Devontae's gravity.
Because of Devontae.
Like, there was almost no one else in the league who had that type of gravity. So
that was really apparent, I think, early in week one. And I can't remember if I talked about this in – spoiler alert, we're in a group chat together where we talk football all day. I don't remember if I brought it up in the group chat, but you know, the Vikings are playing split safety coverage in week one, and you could tell that did not respect the X. They didn't respect the solo side receiver. And usually that would have been Davante Adams. So now it's like, oh, everything that we've seen in the LaFleur era now has to fundamentally change because the math on the other side, like, it's not balancing out. So now we have to figure something else out. The other thing go ahead.
No, I was going to say on that point, that was a point I made. I think we had them week two on Sunday Night Football against the Bears, and now obviously we have them again Sunday night. And that was a point I was making as watching the film and with the Sunday Night people. It was just like the quote-unquote weak safety, the guy who is the safety, the too high safety that's to the side of the single receiver. Obviously, there's a corner there too. But that guy is really it's the key throughout the whole league. It's been the key in college football and high school football for like 20 years. But now we're seeing it more and more in the NFL being the key to the whole, to how you get the ball down the field, really. And there was a play against Washington where the Packers run their kind of their dagger concept, which is a play that they run all the time, really. And you can see that. Just
a deep, deep runoff and then a dig over the middle.
Yeah, exactly. You're trying to open up the middle of the field by running a guy off, like you said. And you can see that weak safety for Washington, I forget who it was, just toy with them, pretend like he's going to the X, and then just come down and play that route beautifully. And the linebacker gets underneath the throwing window. They can't throw the runoff route because the weak safety is there. And then the dig is covered by the linebacker dropping because he knows what's coming. And it's like, well, if teams are just going to be able to do that, and not kind of respect the X, like you said, it's rough.
It's tough. And one of the things I'm very worried about, I know Rodgers has brought it up recently because I think the narrative's kind of been built around it quietly and moving up, is just that, like, he's not running this year. And it's not even just running. It's like he's not really breaking the pocket that much. I think against Washington, he broke the pocket like once on that touchdown to Aaron Jones. But I think it's something like he has 8 carries this year. But if you actually look at the carries, all but 2 of them are like aborted snaps or kneel downs. So like counting all of those as scrambles isn't necessarily fair. If a quarterback isn't running and he just wants to throw things quickly into the flats and he can't go under center because of his thumb injury, which is what LaFleur said on Monday, and we've kind of been able to piece together now. Why aren't teams just playing this guy in cover two, or a two-man, right? And just getting a hat on a hat, get deep safeties out there so it's harder to complete those shot plays down the sideline. And if he's not going to run, you don't need more than the 4 pass rushers, right? And two-man has given him a lot of problems in the past. Like the Saints opener in 2021, right? The big thing was like, hey, we didn't think that they were going to play us in two-man. Things spiral out of control. They end up losing by 1,000,000 points, and Jordan Love has to end up finishing a week one game. Just completely embarrassing, right? They don't have Davante Adams to help them out there anymore. So that's my big worry moving forward. Because I think, not to get into the Buffalo preview already, but Buffalo's a team that, like, they could play them in two-man. They could do it. With the defensive guys that they have right now and the play caller that they have, they could just play them in two-man and, like, embarrass them, put kind of, like, the playbook out there on how to beat this team as long as Rodgers can't get under center. And that becomes a real problem for them for the rest of the year because it seems like right now all they can do is throw flats. Well, if you take that away, what else can they do? And that's where I have a lot of questions.
Well, I like you said, with the success of these flat routes or stuff that's mm-hmm. underneath. So Rodgers is the shortest timed average time to throw in his career.
Yes.
Or at least it's like 10, 12 years, something like that, since we have the numbers for that. So already 60% of his throws are short of the sticks, like short of the first down marker. That leads the league. I mean, there's all these categories, like you said.
I saw stats that compared him to like Alex Smith. Like this year is basically like what Alex Smith's averages look like in terms of like how aggressive he is throwing down the field. And, you know, what Pro Football Focus, which Derek writes for, they have the Alex metric, right? Didn't they name like the metric of like average
football
like
outsiders? Football outsiders? I think you.
What did I say?
PFF.
Oh, my bad. It's all stats companies.
But yeah, we do have the Alex where it's I think it's like air less of expect. It's a really weird acronym.
It's basically
throwing short of the sticks.
Yeah, throwing short of the sticks. It's literally named after Alex Smith, and Aaron Rodgers is replicating that right now.
So those throws, but those throws, who, you know, you have all these bubbles to Devontae, you have the flats to Devontae, both, you know, types of RPOs or anything like that, or even like these like swings at the end of a check down to Aaron Jones or whatever, and they're just not producing the same amount. So it's like, A, you're doing it more, and B, those plays aren't producing anything. That's kind of a problem. I have a theory for you guys. I just wrote about it. You can go on pff.com and read about it. So I wrote about like Brady and Rodgers, and jointly, both of them having their shortest average time to throw. Tom Brady at 2.25 seconds is absolutely like insane to have an average time to throw that quick. I don't think Rodgers was like that, but it's still the fastest he's ever thrown it. But my question is to you is, because I feel like I remember this with Drew Brees in his last year. I'm not saying it's Rodgers' last year, he's going to retire, but Brady for sure, I think we can make some arguments about that. But it's almost like you get to a point where, and they've had some mix arounds with the offensive line. Obviously, the Bakhtiari issue is always ongoing. But, you know, you get to a point in your career where, man, you don't want to take in hits anymore. So you talk about him not scrambling, like he doesn't want to get outside the pocket. He wants to get the ball off as soon as possible. That's the same with Brady. You're just like, man, I'm not here to take hits, man. I'm 38. Brady's 45. Like, I don't take hits. So what ends up happening is you feel like, oh, it's okay because I'm this elite quarterback. I can just speed up the process here. I can go through my reads faster. I'll do the stuff. And then
like, I don't have to go to 1 to 2 to 3. One looks open pre-snap. I'm just going to throw it to him. And then it's like, oh, that was a turnover on downs. It's like,
and then you end
that
up
kills us
inaccurate.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And like I said, that was my thing with Brees in 2020. And that's not like Brees. Obviously we saw the arm deteriorate over the last few years, but 2019, he could still play. 2020, he can play. Like, it was over. And Manning is the same way. Roethlisberger post injury was the same way. Like they just couldn't play. It was over. Mm-hmm. Rodgers, you know, it's only been like a month, let's say, you know, same kind of with Brady. But there's similarities there. And again, I wouldn't say that Rodgers is done because he's still, quote, you know,
I think young-ish. The arm strength is still there. That's the big difference for me.
That's the difference. But the thing that's crazy is we said that about Brady last year. Now, again, 45 years old, big difference. But Brady was like, oh, my God, his arm is crazy. And I know you have your theories on that, Justice. We don't have to get into it. But
he's gene editing. We're going to figure out, like, hey, all the gene editing stuff came out during Tom Brady's peak. He's the only quarterback who can do this. It's like, oh, yeah, he's gene editing. They have glowing dogs in Mississippi. They figured out how to make glowing dogs in Mississippi. Look it up.
That's my theory. He's speeding up his process. It's not working. I feel like – I don't know if that's something you guys are seeing as well, but, yeah.
I don't necessarily think you're wrong, but what I would say is that – so for all of the guys you listed except for Rodgers – it's kind of excusable or understandable in the sense of like they didn't have another option. Brady is old. He can't move. Brees couldn't move. Roethlisberger at that stage couldn't move. Rodgers can still move. It's not a problem of like he can't get outside the pocket or can't do that stuff. He just like opts not to do it, which I think makes it more frustrating. Because like if you're Brady and you don't want to get hit, well, like literally your only option is to just speed it up. Whereas like Rodgers could be dancing around a little bit more if he wanted to and scrambling, but he just opts not to. And I think that makes it even more frustrating when all he does every single week in press conferences or in the locker room is, you know, everybody's got to step up and make a play and do this. And it's like, dude, you're the one that is actively taking away opportunities for yourself to be making plays. So I don't know, man. He's just it's annoying to watch.
And the weird thing, too, every Packers game this year ends in a Hail Mary attempt where he holds on to the ball forever and he just gets absolutely clobbered. Just absolutely clobbered at the end of a game for a Hail Mary attempt that is like, what, 1 in 50 chance that they're actually going to like end up converting it. And, you know, teams are playing them deep because, you know, obviously Rodgers has converted some of those Hail Marys in the past. So it's like, it's not even getting to the end zone. It's like you have to throw it short of the end zone and then hope one of these like rugby plays end up scoring. And they had one that was, ended up being close against the Commanders. But I mean, like that Giants game, the end of like the one day he got hurt with his thumb. I mean, that's a game changer. And the fact that, you know, they've kind of admitted like he can't even go under center all the time anymore because of this, that's a huge problem. And the fact that it sounds like Rodgers talked about this on McAfee a couple weeks ago, where he was like, teams are just kind of like game planning or personnel packages, which is something that like we've talked about like in our group chats and stuff for a long time. You know, Deontay Lee, the point that we always came, Deontay Lee of now of The Athletic, we've always talked about is like, so he's a high school defensive coordinator, very successful one. We had Seth and Deontay on one time, and we said Deontay is going to be the most successful out of like any of us. Like Deontay is going to win a Super Bowl at some point. He doesn't care necessarily about like personnel. If you're thinking of like 11, 12, 20, it's like, who are those players? Right. And the thing that's kind of killing Green Bay is you go under center, teams are going to play them in too high. Why? Because they want to take away the boot, right? They want to take away boot action game. If you're in the gun, they're playing them single high because they want to take away RPOs. And then if Dylan and Mercedes Lewis are in, it's pretty clear that they're going to run the ball. So that's when they spin into single high against under center. And now the under center game is almost, it's not completely phased out. They still do it every once in a while. And I would be interested in seeing like, why do you think Rodgers is like pain management on his thumb can handle like X amount of under center snaps, but not more than that. But I mean, it's all becoming a problem. And that's why you're seeing him just being the gun, throwing into the flats. And there's enough tape of it out there. Like, I don't think any of us think Jack Del Rio is the most innovative defensive coordinator out there, right? Rodgers said after the game that like the Commanders really didn't give him any problems from a schematic standpoint, right? It was just guys lining up and beating them. McDermott is a different animal than Jack Del Rio. And we could see some changeups and like game plan things against the Packers if his thumb isn't right and they can't get under center. And he missed practice on Wednesday. He practiced on Thursday. I don't know if that shows any progress in his thumb because every game since the London game, he's been out on that Wednesday. So if that's the case, man, like, I don't want to be like the sky is falling guy. Like there are a lot of things playing into this. I think in general, the team is going to be better next season than it is this year. Who knows if Rodgers retires, I don't think he wants to go out like this, but it could get ugly for the end of this season at the very least.
My thing with his thumb and getting under center is like, if you can't get under center, what is the LaFleur offense? Because that's what that's what he is. That's what they want to be. They want to be able to run the ball, do some of the play action stuff. And a lot of even last year with like Devontae, a lot of what they were doing was those access throws where he's like, you can call it an RPO, but they're getting under center, lining up in a run look. The cornerback is like 7 yards off the ball and he's like, screw it, I'm throwing it out quick to Devontae. Well, that's completely gone. They're not getting under center at all. And their gun game really last year was like, we're going to go 3-by-1 and Devontae is going to be isolated on like a backside shoulder, or we're going to get a 3-by-1. He's going to be in the slot and they're going to run like an over route. Like that was all they really wanted to do out of gun, that or some of their RPO stuff. And so now they're getting into gun. They can't do any of the vertical stuff they were doing with Adams. All they really have is a lot of this, some of the quicker stuff that they're doing. And now they have to lean into the quicker stuff more because in order to get their 5 best skill players on the field, they have to go 2-back and do the split gun stuff with Dylan and Jones. So like all they have is like this offense that does nothing. They can only get into the gun and run RPOs and throw into the flat. So, like, I do think there probably is, like, some degree of LaFleur doesn't have an answer yet, but it's pretty clear that both the offensive skill talent and Rodgers are, like, putting a lot of hindrances on LaFleur, even being able to find an answer for trying to get out of his comfort zone offensively.
That two-back stuff is useless.
It's not good.
They cut it down, I think, the last 3 weeks. Like, it's under 10 snaps the last 3 weeks.
After the Jets game. After the Bucks game. The Bucks were calling beaters to it. I mean, the Bucks were basically the teams the first couple weeks of the season. The Packers weren't handling the end man on the line of scrimmage on zone plays on the backside. And teams were basically covering everything other than the Rodgers pull, right? And we saw that against Tampa. They blew up some plays. And then we saw that against Minnesota in week one at the goal line where Za'Darius Smith ended up tackling Aaron Jones on the backside of like a 4th-and-1 or 4th-and-2 or something like that. And Rodgers was like, dang, I should have pulled that. They ended up doing some different stuff. They used Aguara as an off-ball tight end and kind of been able to handle the end man on the line of scrimmage that way. But it's cut down their usage a ton because that becomes a run-it-run. Right at that point.
Because here's the thing about split back. Like if you're going split back gun, you are immediately taking vertical threats off of the line of scrimmage. Yeah. So you have to have receivers or tight ends on the ball who are like can actually threaten defenses down the field and not make you immediately want to come up for all the running back stuff. Packers very clearly don't have that. So what's the point of doing any of this two back stuff? Especially if they're not going to come out and go two back and like get under center. Like they don't want to do any of that, and really you don't ever want to do two back pony under center, really, unless like I mean like the Cowboys can kind of do it, but like that's they're kind of the exception really.
They run two plays out of it. One of them you could easily do with a receiver. Mm-hmm. You know, the inside zone bubble, which we saw every other team runs with
that,
and that they used to run it with a receiver too,
dude. That play I swear to God is like the And this happens with like a bunch of different things in the NFL, but like some team will do a thing and they'll do it really well. Like other teams have done really good with like mixing up their split back stuff. Like the Niners. The Niners actually have a really interesting split back gun package. And a lot of other teams will be like, oh, we should try to do split back gun. But they will only call this damn play where you run the inside zone and have the bubble off of it. And you'll see every team, they'll do this and then not have any other play off of it. And it's like, well, you're just doing it just to do it. And the Packers have like made this a part of their offense where they only have this play.
They have the other play they run out of that, which I kind of don't really understand. I don't know if you've noticed this, but like it's a hand to Dylan, and then Aaron Jones kind of sneaks out the backside, like
to the flat,
to the flat, and then I think they finally try. So it's not really an RPO because Rodgers is never looking at it because he's to his back. And then they tried to play action off it against the Commanders, and they just kind of covered it, and that was it. So
yeah,
it's like, all right, well, that's why your EPA in those plays is like -1.5 per play or something like that. It's not good.
I mean, that's just a spread version of like a fullback dive toss type of thing. That's all that is.
I know that's true. The one thing I always find interesting is like LaFleur goes up there and he's like, well, we can't carry too much in our split back gun package, because what if one of these guys goes out, right? But then I point to San Francisco and I'm like, these plays are for Debo, clearly, right? Where it's like, if Debo's not that guy, then we're not running it, right? I just don't understand why they aren't treating it that way with like Aaron Jones, where they're like, look, it's fine. Like, this is the Aaron Jones play. We're getting this look because Aaron Jones is in the backfield. If he's not there, we'll go to something else. And I don't know if it's because they have such a young team that like the other guy, like the wide receivers or whatever, like need to get the reps in practice to be able to actually run plays in game. But I don't understand why at the NFL level, you have to kind of think like that and be like, well, we can't have an expanded split back gun offense. If, you know, these guys aren't going to be on the field, one of them goes down, we have to get out of our game plan. Then get out of the game plan. I know, like, I know that sounds simpler than it actually is, but like, why can other teams do it and we can't? That's the question I haven't necessarily had answered yet.
I mean, that kind of goes back to what I was talking about with like, just once you get out of this under center structure that LaFleur is so used to, it just seems like he isn't fully comfortable like finding what his identity is outside of that. And that's fine, because like when you come from that system and that's all you know, and you're now suddenly forced to like be a different kind of offense, it's really hard to adapt, even if you are generally considered one of the smartest offensive minds in the NFL. But like, they're very clearly don't have that right now. And I think, kind of like to your point, he has these couple of things he wants to do, and like if he doesn't have them, he just like spazzes out and he doesn't want to do anything else.
What do they do well on offense?
Aaron Jones.
Yeah, the Aaron Jones plays are good.
And probably not enough, but Aaron Jones. Yeah. I mean, that's really it. I mean, AJ Dillon's
and that's the funny thing about the two back stuff. They're all Dillon handoffs. I mean, yeah, there's RPO action to them, but like they're all inside zone to AJ Dillon.
And Jones has the only good plays because he's the only person in the entire offense who, if he gets the ball, you think, oh shit, he might get 20 yards. He's the only person in the offense where no matter where he touches the ball, he can get 20 yards. Or the touchdown he caught against the Commanders, he's like converting an out into a wheel, I think.
Yeah.
None of their receivers are threatening enough to like actually win down the field like that. It has to be Aaron Jones. He's the only dude who can do anything on this offense.
That's why I always thought like the 20 personnel stuff, split back gun is so limiting to the point that Derek made earlier, right? Where you're taking guys vertical off of the field. I've seen some very good split back gun offenses, but they all involve the triple option.
That's what I was about to say.
Right?
Or and you're using them both in protection immediately because you have other receivers who can go run on one. Well, the Packers, that's clearly not an option.
It's like empty where you have two tight ends on the field and they're attached, and it's like we're chipping and then running routes, but we're taking a shot play.
It's almost, and I know some teams do this, Seahawks, for example, it's almost like the NFL's version of the full house, you know, the old Mike Gundy stuff where you put the diamond backfield. And the whole point was like, okay, we have enough like tricks, you know, smoke and mirrors to hand the ball off and get some yards. But really, once you give us one-on-ones, because we have the two receivers out there, we'll take them. And like Derek said, they just can't take those. They're not one-on-ones necessarily because you do have three pass threats there, but like they just can't. They just can't take them. Now, the other thing is, like, you know, they played the Bucs a couple of weeks ago, and then the Bucs structurally give up that kind of intermediate middle of the field behind the linebackers in front of the safety, just like I said, structurally, off play action. They hit it four or five times, our favorite route, the drift route, the short post route, whatever you want to call it. And they just haven't really been back to that. And again, I know the Bucs are a team that you can take that from them, take that against their defense. But it's a play that kind of works no matter what. And he threw it against the Bears a couple times against looks that you generally don't throw that into too high. And they just haven't been back to that. And that's such an easy chain mover that they're just like trying to find stuff that it's not really working.
Oh, good.
I was going to say, to Justice's point earlier, like teams just play man against them, because I think the one thing that can kind of mess up the drift route is if you just play press man and you're on him the whole time. I think we even saw like, I think it was more like a slant route, but like Dobbs tried to run. I think he was the isolated receiver on like a 3rd and 11 or something. He tries to run one of those inside routes and he's just gloved up the entire time because none of these dudes can beat one-on-one coverage. So I think to Justice's point, like don't do what the Bucs did and give them some of these like blitz looks where you can let them throw the ball in front of your coverage defenders. Don't do that. Just punch the receivers in the mouth at the line of scrimmage and dare them to beat you, because it doesn't seem like any of them can. Like maybe Lazard will beat you on like a couple of contested catches every now and then, but like that's all they're going to do in terms of getting
Green separation. Bay Packers, and you might hear this on Sunday Night Football, the Packers receivers have the lowest contested catch rate in the league this year. So they got no one. And Lazard's not even not playing great this week. So,
right. That's true.
One more thing before we get to break and we talk about the Bills-Packers matchup. The 20 stuff, right? The 20 – or it's actually 21 personnel.
Yeah,
it's 21. Because they're playing with the tight end most of the time. So, two back, one tight end. The thing I don't understand – so, we talked about split back gun. We talked about how most of the offenses that run split back gun – and I'm usually – generally, I'm talking about college offenses, to be honest here, because there's not that many teams that run a ton of split back gun at the NFL level because of the restrictions that it puts on routes down the field. Why don't you have Dillon in the backfield and line up Aaron Jones at wide receiver more? Because we haven't seen that. And that's something like you know, the Steelers were able to get a lot of success out of that with like Le'Veon Bell and stuff. And the other option is like, what if you could get teams into two tight end looks out of 21 and use like AJ Dillon as like a wing tight end or something like that? That solves a lot of your issues, right? If you could have a wing out there and, you know, Mercedes Lewis is still hand in the dirt, and then you can run RPOs like that. I know that he doesn't want to be considered like a fullback or anything like that. He's talked about that before. He had like one fullback snap last year, and he got pretty mad that people were bringing that up. And it's like, dude, we got to win ball games. Like that, we can't think like that. Like something has to change with that personnel package. Let's take it a break. And on the other side, we'll preview the Packers Bills death march.
Support for this show comes from Art Beats and Lyrics, a new documentary from Vox Creative, along with Jack Daniel's Tennessee Honey and Colt Creative. Directed by Bill Horace, Art Beats and Lyrics showcases how a humble art show has grown into a cultural phenomenon. The film unveils the origin stories of the event's founder, Jabari Graham, and its curator, Dwayne W. Wright, exploring how Atlanta has shaped their individual paths while also revealing their distinct roles within Art Beats and Lyrics. The documentary follows Jabari W. and several of this year's feature artists as they gear up for ABNL's 20th anniversary tour, captivating thousands of fans at each and every show. Stream Art, Beats, and Lyrics now on Hulu. Please drink responsibly. Whiskey Specialty, 35% alcohol by volume, Jack Daniel's Distillery, Lynchburg, Tennessee. Jack Daniel's and Tennessee Honey are registered trademarks. 2024 Jack Daniel's, all rights reserved.
There are a lot of questions around what you eat. How is it made? Where does it come from? What are the impacts of its packaging? The What You're Eating podcast is here to help you understand how your food gets to your plate and put into context the full impact of the food you eat, whether that's on animals, the planet, or other people. Join host Jerusha Klemperer, director of Foodprint, as she dives deeper to uncover the problems with the industrial food system and offer examples of more sustainable practices. She provides practical advice for how you can help support a better ecosystem through the food that you buy and the systemic changes you push for. From practical conversations with farmers and chefs to discussions with policy experts on the barriers to sustainability, the What You're Eating podcast covers more than just the what. It covers everything from the why to the how of the food you love to eat. Listen and subscribe to What You're Eating at foodprint.org/whatyoureeating or wherever you get your podcasts.
And we're back. All right, this game opened up as a 10.5-point spread. Aaron Rodgers' first game in his career as a starter where the Packers have been double-digit underdogs. What do we think? What does it look like if the Packers win this game?
Josh Allen dies on the first play of the game. That's how they win this game. And even then, I mean, Case Keenum is not a bad backup. I mean,
like, look, the Packers' last three games were four games, right? Bailey Zappe, Daniel Jones, Zach Wilson, and Taylor Heineke. So
Case Keenum is not lower than that.
Yeah, I was like, can Case Keenum pull it through? I mean, maybe at this point. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't. What does it look like? That's actually a good question. What does it look like? They're running the football just enough, and probably just enough to get the Bills out of too high, which I think they'll probably play a bit. They are generally a zone team. They're generally a too high team, though they will spin down to one high often enough. But I think maybe that's it. Hit some big plays on the outside. I feel like you have the ability to hit big plays on this. I know we just talked about it, not having the guys. It's just like, I and I know, like, you know, like Sammy Watkins and Romeo Dubs are like, you know, Dubs hopefully will become a good player. Watkins, we always talk about his potential, but it's like, well, that's it. Like go make some plays. Like, yeah, one-on-one on the outside, go make some plays. And hopefully that's how it looks.
Now that I think about it, actually, I think if they're actually going to win this game, it kind of has to look like the Dolphins game did for the Bills, at least in terms of like what the Packers defense is going to do, where they are sending pressure. They are forcing an offensive line that is still kind of iffy and doesn't always pick up blitzes particularly well, or at least hot and cold in the way that they do that. I think you have to pressure them that way. And then, like, the Packers DBs are talented, dude. Like, their corners yes. are talented. And if they get them in a game where the Bills are trying to throw 45, 50 times a game and, like, all you're doing is just auto stretching the corners. Like, there's a world where the Packers talent can win out there. I'm not sure if it will, but like, I think that kind of has to be the formula where you're just getting enough pressure. You're completely forcing the Bills out of running the ball. I mean, the Bills are kind of iffy on how much they want to run the ball anyway, which I think is actually really, really good for the Packers. But yeah, I think that's kind of how it has to look. It has to look like the Dolphins game did.
And we kind of talk about Buffalo as a glass cannon, right? In terms of like them, they just kind of pass the ball. They don't really go under center and stuff like that. Packers are less than the Bills under center season long now in terms of the percentages. And
let Ultimate decide that.
Well, I got that from Next Gen Stats.
The Bills did start to get a little bit better at it. I think once they got some of their linemen a little bit healthier, because I think for the first like month of the season, they had some issues there. And now they've been healthier. They've gotten under center a little bit. I still think they're just not an offense that wants to be balanced. They want to throw the ball as much as they can.
Yeah. Just to talk about the injuries right now, to get in front of that, Rashawn Gary went from a non-participant to a limited participant today. So did Elgton Jenkins. I don't think that's a surprise. And Aaron Rodgers, which again, that's another expected one. So hopefully Rashawn Gary will be able to play as a pass rusher. They haven't, I mean, JJ Anagbare has kind of developed into their third pass rusher, but outside of that, they really don't have anything off of the bench. So if he's starting, they have no depth at that point. So hopefully Gary will be able to play in this game. The tackle, or I guess offensive line situation, again, is weird. They had to basically, the way that they made it sound is like, surprise on Sunday morning, David Bakhtiari isn't going to go. Zach Tom is now the starting left tackle, which might be a reason why Aaron Rodgers is rushing a lot of these throws, right? I would, if he said that, and I don't think he would, for all the stuff that he talks about generally about like players have to play better, he doesn't really like single out individual players. If he did say like, yeah, I had a fourth round rookie left tackle, that's why I'm throwing all these flat routes off of pre-snap looks, and make a lot of sense, right? Like,
I mean, we saw the really Eagles do that, right? When they didn't have Mailata, like they instantly defaulted to like, screw it, we're just going to throw RPO flat routes the entire game.
Yeah. So the Bakhtiari thing is something to watch. I mean, he was a guy who played all or practiced all week. Friday was not given an injury status. Saturday was given a questionable status. Then he just didn't play, right? So I don't think you could feel comfortable about, for sure, like Bakhtiari is going to play left tackle until like kickoff, basically. Like, we're at that point with him. So who knows what's going to happen at that spot. I think Elgton Jenkins is going to play right guard again. Yosh is going to play right tackle. Or Jenkins is going to play left guard. He got moved over, or they flipped him with John Runyon Jr. The wide receiver position is really where it's like, oh, crap, this could get really bad. Alan Lazard has a shoulder injury. He got hurt last week, right? Came in and out of the lineup. Did finish the game, but, like, he was – I mean, they're showing cuts of him on the sideline, and he's, like, grabbing his shoulder after catches, right? And it's like, all right, this dude is at the very least on a pitch count. He said that he's probably not going to play this week. Today we're recording on a Thursday. Sammy Watkins has been limited back-to-back practices with a hamstring injury. He was limited all last week, but did end up playing. I'd assume he's going to play. The big question mark is Christian Watson, right? He has a hamstring injury. He's missed the last two games. Second hamstring flare-up. He's had limited snaps because in the summer he also had a knee surgery, right? This is kind of the one that it's like, dang, he's not even getting like the chemistry reps, right? He's been a back-to-back limited participant in practice. He was a non-participant last week when he didn't play. So hopefully he's going to play. I assume he's going to be listed as questionable as long as he practices on Friday. But soft tissue injuries, this Packers football team, you know, knock on wood, you can't count on anything. There's a situation, again, assuming Sammy is going to play, because I assume Sammy is going to play. There's a possibility that, like, the wide receivers they go into this game with are Sammy Watkins, Romeo Doubs, Amari Rodgers, Samori Toure, and that's the four. They do have an open roster spot, so maybe they could call up Juwan Winfrey, but, like, if Juwan Winfrey is your wide receiver three, you got problems. You're playing the Buffalo Bills, who have Josh Allen. Like, that is a nuclear bomb.
The Samori Toure thing is funny because Rodgers said like 3 days ago, like, if we're going to keep making mistakes on offense, we're going to have people who haven't been able to play start to get into the lineup. And at receiver, it's literally only Toure. And it's like,
yeah,
he was like was he a seventh round pick or like undrafted? Like this is not round pick. This is not saving the offense. Like who is he talking about that is supposed to come off the bench and save anything?
Well, talk to our buddy Eric Galco from the East West Shrine Game, and he'll say Samori Toure is better than Romeo Doss. The Amari Rodgers thing is so frustrating too, because it's like he doesn't do anything on offense. He has
the drop he had. I mean, so here actually this kind of like, I feel like wraps up the entire problem with the Packers offense. There was a play where Amari Rodgers was the number one receiver to the right side. Aaron Rodgers gets forced out of the pocket to the right. Amari Rodgers like breaks whatever he's doing. I think he was just on like a curl route or a hitch route, goes up the sideline, tries to make a play, scramble. Aaron throws it to him and it's like on his fingertips. It's like kind of a tough catch. Like Devontae Adams could make that play. Like MVS used to be able to make that play. Amari Rodgers is never making that play.
Yeah. And he also fumbles on punt team. Yes. I think he has.
His hands don't even work on punt team. Why would they work for a thing like this?
Yeah. Like, I think he has one more fumble than he has receptions this year. And on his career, he has one fewer fumble than he has receptions in his career. It's never good. That's never good.
But you know what's funny about him? Like, I think we all...
That he was never good in college?
Yeah.
And he had Trevor Lawrence at quarterback?
Yeah. I was like, you know, you liked a lot of the stuff he did in college in terms of a college player and, like, taking a bubble screen 75 yards. But it's like, if that's all you can do in college, that's not what you're going to be doing in the NFL.
Yeah, and I think one of the things that kind of, especially now when there's, like, injuries and you're post-Devonte and Randall Cobb, who's Rodgers' safety net, is on IR now... I think one of the things that are kind of hurting the Packers, especially if they're in the gun and not under center, this goes back to your point of like LaFleur's offense is built to be an under center. We're running the ball. We're running play action team, right? What do you ask of those wide receivers when they're in tight splits? You want them to block. Okay, so what are we looking at wide receivers? All these guys are 200 plus pounds, right? Mm-hmm. It's really limiting in terms of like what you're actually looking at for guys coming out of the draft or free agency or anything like that. It's why Sammy Watkins was signed by the team, right? It's why they took Amari Rodgers, who I think it was him and then the kid from Houston who went to Michigan. I'm spacing on his name right now. Those were like the biggest wide receivers in that draft class in 2021, right? Which is maybe why they passed up on some of these wide receivers. If you're in the gun and all you're throwing is flat routes and stuff like that, like, and if you're going to get man coverage, probably wanting a little bit more speed out on the field. But this is an offense that now is like, we plan to be an under center play action team. And now we are a gun quarterback, can't go under center. Teams are taking away the run team. And it's just like the personnel isn't built to play football the way that it is, that's forced to play.
You know, doesn't that make it more insane that they didn't take Pickens, by the way?
Yeah, I
don't want to talk about it. We could have taken
the two big receiver who was going to block. That was the guy.
Pickens, like, yeah, Pickens was perfect for this offense. And it hurts every day, every time. Because the Steelers, for some reason, are getting all these damn primetime games while the Packers have to kick off in morning games and killing me as a West Coaster.
Enough.
Every time I see Pickens, I'm like, dang, we could have had him. Same thing with Karlaftis. Those were the two guys. The plan was the two Georges. We didn't come away with it. By the way, you said the – I think you said earlier, like, the defense has a lot of talent. The Packers
Yes. It's why everyone before the season was like, this is at least a top 10 unit. Because you look at every spot on the roster, like, the depth kind of sucked. But they had guys who were Pro Bowl talents at literally every position with, like, some projection for the two rookies that they had. Like, that was it.
They're second in cash flow on defense this year. Second. And that's not including two first-round picks that they spent on the defensive side. And Devontae Wyatt just hasn't gotten in the games. And I would like to see more from him. Not just like, I hope he plays better. Like, no, I would like to see more snaps of him so I can evaluate him. I would like to see
him playing, period.
Yes, I would like to see that. TJ Slayton, I think, has been playing better than Jaren Reed or Dean Lowry. And those guys, I mean, that's kind of what kills them in the run game. People always bring up, like, the rushing yards EPA or like success rate and stuff like that in the run. And up until the last 2 weeks, the Packers really have been just like, we're matching base to 12 or 21 personnel. We're playing nickel to 11 personnel. We're sitting in two high safeties and we're not really blitzing anyone. They've changed that in the last couple of weeks. But what was really killing them is like those DNs, like Lowry and Jaren Reed, They're not making any plays. They're not. They're playing a lot of snaps to get zero TFLs. The only guy who's getting any penetration on that front, on the interior at the very least, is Kenny Clark. And I think Preston Smith's taking a jump up in his game. Rashawn Gary's had a great year as a pass rusher. Still has some contain issues and stuff. That's just always going to be the case. But, like, if they could, like, let Slayton or Wyatt develop into something, like, that would go so far for this defense, because it would keep them fresh. It would get offenses out of, like, we're just running the ball and we could just move the ball downfield and have a 15-play drive.
What are your thoughts on the tandem between Quay and Devontae Campbell? Because I think I could be totally wrong here, but in my head, you know, one of the issues is you draft a guy, you got to get him on the field. And this stuff that you've said to me too. So it's like, I'm kind of taking your points and like recycling them back to you, but it's like, you have this guy, you got to put him on the field. So now you're playing with two linebackers. They did a lot of one linebacker stuff last year, 5-1, mm-hmm. kind of like this new style of defense that everyone's playing. And now you have to put Quay on the field, and he's a rookie linebacker, man. Like, that's not our position to play. So I don't know. And it may be affecting Devontae Campbell because he's not playing where he played last year, and et cetera, et cetera.
I would like to see him get into penny fronts, like you said, where it's, you know, five guys on five offensive linemen, one inside linebacker. That's where Devondre Campbell thrived last season, right?
You know what they actually could do out of like 5-1 stuff? And other teams have done this with their guys. Is that, and like Devondre Campbell has done this before when he was with the Falcons. Go 5-1 and put Campbell on the edge.
But you,
if you have,
that's what I was going to say. Get a penny out of nickel personnel.
Yeah. Then you have to make the decision of who is going to kick inside. I guess Preston Smith would kick inside.
Well, get Gary can't set an edge. Get him one-on-one with the guard.
Gary's big. Yeah, Gary can be that like masher type, like what Pernell McPhee like or whoever it. Used to do.
You could also make the argument that of something like that, where now Quay is the one linebacker, just go sideline to sideline. You know what I mean? Like, don't worry about anything. Find the ball, go hit somebody. You know what I mean? Rather
wall than three, wall gap, three. Yeah, wall yeah. three. Run and chase after the ball. Run three in the pass game.
That was Georgia. I mean,
simple, right? So I don't know. Maybe that helps.
Yeah, I think the linebackers, you could see the athleticism. I think Devondre's taking a step back, which probably should have been predictable. I didn't think it was going to be this big of a step back. Maybe some of that is him playing like actual nickel to, you know, inside linebacker defense instead of playing single. But yeah, that's been a little bit disappointing. Seth has to get out of here because he has to work Thursday Night Football. Let's get into predictions. What do you guys think the score is going to be?
Oh, Christ. 38-13. I think they're just going to hammer them. Dude.
Really?
Dude, they're going to hammer them. Why wouldn't they?
I agree. I agree.
Bills have most of who they need to be healthy for this game. The Packers were already bad. They're missing their best receiver. They're going to have a musical chairs offensive line again. Rodgers is still complaining about his thumb. They don't know what they want to do with the offense. And until the defense looks the way that we thought it might before the season, there's no reason to believe that playing against the Superman Josh Allen is going to be the one week they decide to turn it on.
But Rodgers said this is exactly what the team needs, though. To be doubted.
He said a lot of things, man. He said a lot of people need a lot of things, and I'm not sure I believe him on any of them. So,
as a full-time bettor now, I've made $75 in the past couple of weeks. Okay, so you like 10.5 points or 11 points, whatever you're gonna get it at. Like the value is in taking the Packers there and taking 11 points because that's insane. But I still think they're gonna get killed.
Yeah.
Because Josh Allen is just like, he's different right now. He's freaking different. He's throwing these cover two hole shots. Okay, my new thing, I know I have to leave. My new thing is that I just care if you can consistently hit a cover two hole shot. That's the only thing. Because that's how the league is right now, right? Everyone's playing cover two. Like, can you make that throw? I don't even care if you can hit the safety splitter in like the bender in like cover two. I don't care. I don't give a shit about that anymore. It's like, can you hit the hole shot? That's an even harder throw. Yeah. Can you do it consistently? And Josh Allen's the only guy. He threw one against the Steelers where he's running to his offhand. Like, I guess for him, it was to his left. And he still is able to throw like almost across his body from like an open chest into the hole, whatever. Good player, that guy.
Oh man, how wrong were we about Josh Allen? We were all anti Josh Allen, right?
I said he would be.
I know Derek and I were.
Listen.
Oh yeah, Seth was the Josh Allen guy. I forgot about that.
Josh Allen was exactly as bad as we said he was. It's just that he's not now.
I can, dude.
Because here's the thing. I feel like you can, there are different ways you can, this is a whole different discussion, but you can miss on prospects for different reasons, right? I really think Josh Allen was just like, we've never seen a guy develop like this before. Whereas like with other prospects, like I probably was just wrong. Like, I don't know, like DeShone Kizer, I probably just got it wrong. You know what I mean? Whereas like, I don't know, dude, Allen, I've never seen a player become what he was from where he started.
It's crazy. I'm a Ducks fan. I remember the Wyoming-Oregon game. If you would have told me Justin Herbert and Josh Allen would have been two of the three best quarterbacks in the league after that game, I would have bet my life that that wasn't going to be true. Just want to leave this off with a incredibly sicko brain thought. Here's how down bad Packers fans are. We're in the APC Slack, right? Talking about trade candidates, all that stuff. Half of us want to like sell off players already because it's like, dude, we're going to be 3-5 on Sunday night. We're going to be 3-5 on Sunday night. There is no one that you need to be trading for. Build for the future. This isn't it, right? The Kansas City Chiefs just traded for Kadarius Toney, right?
Do you want to trade for Mecole Hardman? Is that
no?
What
he's going to trade for MVS back.
I'd look MVS. Rodgers wants a guy who knows how his little routes run and stuff, right? Like Romeo Doubs ran that post corner that he wanted to get converted back just to a corner post that he wanted to be just a corner
back route. To the corner.
Yeah, and he threw it like it was going to be a corner, and it was like a. Dang, I wish we would have seen it. That's something that like you had to kind of adjust to on the fly. I wish I had guys who had chemistry with me on that stuff. Like MVS makes a lot of sense. Doesn't have guaranteed money next year. Has, I think it's like $1.5 million salary left in this season. And
you've looked this up already.
No, you guys are definitely delusional. This is very sad.
We can trade for MVS. I don't know what you would trade for him, but look. I'm open to the idea of watchable football that doesn't involve just like Aaron Jones as the offense. I'm open to it.
You know, I think we're all open to the idea of watchable football. Okay.
When they say to get the band back together, they don't mean like the tambourine player coming back. You need to get your lead guitarist. And Devontae's not coming back.
He's not coming back. I do enjoy that he had to spend his bye week talking to lawyers about being sued, though. That was very fun for me. Keep it to the feed throughout the week. We'll have injury reports, all that stuff up. Look for the Saturday breaking news that David Bakhtiari isn't going to play or whatever is going to happen with this team now, because apparently the news never stops. Go Pack, go.
Support for this show comes from Art Beats and Lyrics, a new documentary from Vox Creative along with Jack Daniels, Tennessee Honey, and Colt Creative. Directed by Bill Horace, Art Beats and Lyrics showcases how a humble art show has grown into a cultural phenomenon. The film unveils the origin stories of the event's founder, Jabari Graham, and its curator, Dwayne W. Wright, exploring how Atlanta has shaped their individual past while also revealing their distinct roles within Art Beats and Lyrics. The documentary follows Jabari W. and several of this year's feature artists as they gear up for ABNL's 20th anniversary tour, captivating thousands of fans at each and every show. Stream Art, Beats, and Lyrics now on Hulu. Please drink responsibly. Whiskey Specialty, 35% alcohol by volume, Jack Daniel's Distillery, Lynchburg, Tennessee. Jack Daniel's and Tennessee Honey are registered trademarks. 2024 Jack Daniel's, all rights reserved.
Support for this podcast comes from Smartwater. Want to get a little more from every sip? Smartwater Alkaline doesn't just taste crisp and pure. It's loaded with everything you need to perform at your best, whether you're running marathons or boardroom meetings. Elevate how you hydrate and pick up a Smartwater Alkaline today. To learn more, visit drinksmartwater.com.